The two of them crouched, looking across the fields at the hill beyond. The hill rose up, naked and brown, burned clean of vegetation. Nothing grew on its sides. Halfway up, a long steel fence twisted, topped with charged barbed wire. At the other side, a guard walked slowly, a tiny figure patrolling with a rifle and helmet. At the top of the hill lay an enormous concrete block, a towering structure without windows or doors. Mounted guns caught the early morning sunlight, glinting in a row along the roof of the building.
"So that's the plant," Kelly said softly.
"That's it. It would take an army to get up there, up that hill, and over the fence. Unless they were allowed in." Jennings got to his feet, helping Kelly up. They walked back along the path, through the trees, to where Kelly had parked the cruiser.
"Do you really think your green cloth band will get you in?"
Kelly said, sliding behind the wheel. "According to the people in the town, a truckload of laborers will be brought to the plant sometime in the morning. The truck is unloaded at the entrance and the men examined. If everything is in order, they're let inside the grounds past the fence for construction work, manual labor. At the end of the day, they're let out again and driven back to town."
"Will that get you close enough?"
"I'll be on the other side of the fence, at least."
"How will you get to the time scoop? That must be inside the building someplace."
Jennings brought out a small code key. "This will get me in, I hope. I assume it will." Kelly took the key, examining it.
"So that's one of your trinkets. We should have taken a better look inside your little cloth bag."
"We?"
"The company. I saw several little bags of trinkets pass out through my hands. Rethrick never said anything.
Probably the company assumed no one would ever want to get back inside again." Jennings took the code key from her. "Now, do you know what you're supposed to do?"
"I'm supposed to stay here with the cruiser until you get back. You're to give me the material. Then I'm to carry it back to New York and wait for you to contact me."
"That's right." Jennings studied the distant road leading through the trees to the plant gate. "I better get down there. The truck may be along any time."
"What if they decide to count the number of workers?"
"I'll have to take the chance, but I'm not worried. I'm sure he foresaw everything." Kelly smiled. "You and your friend, your helpful friend. I hope he left you enough things to get you out again after you have the photographs." "Do you?"
"Why not?"
Kelly said easily.
"I always liked you. You know that. You knew when you came to me."
Jennings stepped out of the cruiser. He had on overalls and work shoes and a gray sweatshirt. "I'll see you later, if everything goes all right." "I think it will." He patted his pocket. "With my charms here, my good luck charms." He went off through the trees, walking swiftly. The trees led to the very edge of the road. He stayed with them, not coming out into the open. The plant guards were certainly scanning the hillside. They had burned it clean, so that anyone trying to creep up to the fence would be spotted at once. And he had seen infrared searchlights. Jennings crouched low, resting against his heel, watching the road. A few yards up the road was a roadblock just ahead of the gate. He examined his watch. 10:30. He might have a wait, a long wait. He tried to relax. It was after 11 when the great truck came down the road, rumbling and wheezing. Jennings came to life. He took out the strip of green cloth and fastened it around his arm. The truck came closer. He could see its load now. The back was full of workmen. Men in jeans and work shirts bounced and jolted as the truck moved along. Sure enough, each had an armband like his own, a swath of green around his upper arm. So far, so good. The truck came slowly to a halt, stopping at the roadblock. The men got down slowly onto the road, sending up a cloud of dust into the hot midday sun. They slapped the dust from their jeans, some of them lighting cigarettes. Two guards came leisurely from behind the roadblock. Jennings tensed. In a moment, it would be time. The guards moved among the men, examining them, their armbands, their faces, looking at the identification tabs of a few. The roadblock slid back. The gate opened. The guards returned to their positions. Jennings slid forward, slithering through the brush toward the road. The men were stamping out their cigarettes, climbing back into the truck. The truck was gunning its motor, the driver releasing the brakes. Jennings dropped onto the road behind the truck. The rattle of leaves and dirt showered after him. Where he had landed, the view of the guards was cut off by the truck. Jennings held his breath. He ran toward the back of the truck. The men stared at him curiously as he pulled himself up among them, his chest rising and falling. Their faces were weathered, gray and lined. Men of the soil. Jennings took his place between two burly farmers as the truck started up. They did not seem to notice him.
He had rubbed dirt into his skin and let his beard grow for a day. A quick glance, he didn't look much different from the others. But if anyone made a count... The truck passed through the gate onto the grounds. The gate slid shut behind. Now they were going up, up the steep side of the hill, the truck rattling and swaying from side to side. The vast concrete structure loomed nearer. Were they going to enter it? Jennings watched, fascinated. A thin, high door was sliding back, revealing a dark interior. A row of artificial lights gleamed. The truck stopped. The workmen began to get down again. Some mechanics came around them.
"What's this crew for?" one of them asked. "Digging inside," another jerked his thumb. "They're digging again. Send them inside."
Jennings' heart thudded. He was going inside. He felt at his neck. There, inside the gray sweater, a flat plate camera hung like a bib around his neck. He could scarcely feel it, even knowing it was there. Maybe this would be less difficult than he had thought.
The workmen pushed through the door on foot, Jennings with them. They were in an immense workroom, long benches with half-completed machinery, booms and cranes, and the constant roar of work. The door closed after them, cutting them off from inside.
He was in the plant. But where was the time scoop and the mirror?
"This way," a foreman said.
The workmen plodded over to the right. A freight lift rose to meet them from the bowels of the building.
"We're going down below. How many of you have experience with drills?"
A few hands went up.
"You can show the others. We're moving earth with drills and eaters. Any of you work eaters?"
No hands. Jennings glanced at the work tables.
Had he worked here not so long ago?
A sudden chill went through him.
Suppose he were recognized. Maybe he had worked with these very mechanics.
"Come on," the foreman said impatiently. "Hurry up."
Jennings got into the freight lift with the others. A moment later they began to descend down the black tube. Down, down, into the lower levels of the plant. Rethrick Construction was big, a lot bigger than it looked from the ground, a lot bigger than he had imagined. Floors, underground levels, flashing past one after the other. The elevator stopped. The doors opened. He was looking down a long corridor. The floor was thick with stone dust. The air was moist. Around him, the workmen began to crowd out. Suddenly, Jennings stiffened, pulling back. At the end of the corridor, before a steel door, was Earl Rethrick talking to a group of technicians.
"All out," the foreman said. "Let's go."
Jennings left the elevator, keeping behind the others.
Rethrick. His heart beat dully.
If Rethrick saw him, he was finished. He felt in his pockets. He had a miniature Gbaris gun, but it wouldn't be much use if he were discovered. Once Rethrick saw him, it would be all over.
"Down this way."
The foreman led them toward what seemed to be an underground railway to one side of the corridor. The men were getting into metal cars along the track. Jennings watched Rethrick. He saw him gesture angrily, his voice coming faintly down the hall.
Suddenly, Rethrick turned.
He held up his hand and the great steel door behind him opened.
Jennings' heart almost stopped beating. There, beyond the steel door, was the time scoop. He recognized it at once, the mirror, the long metal rods ending in claws, like Berkowski's theoretical model, only this was real.
Rethrick went into the room, the technicians following behind him. Men were working at the scoop, standing all around it. Part of the shield was off. They were digging into the works. Jennings stared, hanging back.
"Say, you," the foreman said, coming toward him.
The steel door shut. The view was cut off. Rethrick, the scoop, the technicians were gone.
Sorry, Jennings murmured. "You know you're not supposed to be curious around here."
The foreman was studying him intensely.
"I don't remember you. Let me see your tab."
"My tab?"
"Your identification tab."
The foreman turned away.
"Bill, bring me the board."
He looked Jennings up and down.
"I'm going to check you from the board, mister. I've never seen you and the crew before. Stay here."
A man was coming from a side door with a checkboard in his hands.
It was now or never.
Jennings sprinted down the corridor toward the great steel door. Behind, there was a startled shout. The foreman and his helper. Jennings whipped out the code key, praying fervently as he ran. He came up to the door, holding out the key. With the other hand, he brought out the Boris gun. Behind the door was the time scoop. A few photographs, some schematics snatched up, and then, if he could get out... The door did not move. Sweat leaped out on his face. He knocked the key against the door. Why didn't it open? Surely... He began to shake, panic rising up in him. Down the corridor, people were coming, racing after him.
Open! But the door did not open. The key he held in his hand was the wrong key. He was defeated. The door and the key did not match. Either he had been wrong, or the key was to be used somewhere else. But where?
Jennings looked frantically around.
Where? Where could he go?
To one side, a door was half open, a regular bolt-locked door. He crossed the corridor, pushing it open. He was in a storeroom of some sort. He slammed the door, throwing the bolt. He could hear them outside, confused, calling for guards. Soon, armed guards would be along. Jennings held the Boris gun tightly, gazing around. Was he trapped? Was there a second way out? He ran through the room, pushing among bales and boxes, towering stacks of silent cartons, end on end. At the rear was an emergency hatch. He opened it immediately. An impulse came to throw the code key away. What good had it been? But surely he had known what he was doing. He had already seen all this. Like God, it had already happened for him. Predetermined. He could not err. Or could he? A chill went through him. Maybe the future was variable. Maybe this had been the right key once, but not anymore. There were sounds behind him. They were melting the storeroom door. Jennings scrambled through the emergency hatch into a low concrete passage, damp and ill-lit. He ran quickly along it, turning corners. It was like a sewer. Other passages ran into it from all sides. He stopped.
Which way? Where could he hide?
The mouth of a major vent pipe gaped above his head.
He caught hold and pulled himself up. Grimly, he eased his body onto it.
They'd ignore a pipe, go on past. He crawled cautiously down the pipe. Warm air blew into his face.
Why such a big vent? It implied an unusual chamber at the other end.
He came to a metal grill and stopped. And gasped. He was looking into the great room, the room he had glimpsed beyond the steel door. Only now he was at the other end. There was the time scoop. And far down, beyond the scoop, was Rethrick, conferring at an active vid screen. An alarm was sounding, whining shrilly, echoing everywhere. Technicians were running in all directions. Guards in uniform poured in and out of doors.
The scoop!
Jennings examined the grill. It was slotted in place. He moved it laterally and it fell into his hands.
No one was watching.
He slid cautiously out into the room, the Boris gun ready. He was fairly hidden behind the scoop, and the technicians and guards were all the way down at the other end of the room where he had first seen them.
And there it was. All around him, the schematics, the mirror, papers, data, blueprints.
He flicked his camera on. Against his chest, the camera vibrated, film moving through it. He snatched up a handful of schematics. Perhaps he had used these very diagrams a few weeks ago. He stuffed his pockets with papers. The film came to an end, but he was finished. He squeaked back into the vent, pushing through the mouth and down the tube. The sewer-like corridor was still empty, but there was an insistent drumming sound, the noise of voices and footsteps.
So many passages. They were looking for him in a maze of escape corridors.
Jennings ran swiftly. He ran on and on, without regard to direction, trying to keep along the main corridor. On all sides, passages flocked off, one after the other, countless passages. He was dropping down, lower and lower, running downhill.
Suddenly he stopped, gasping.
The sound behind him had died away for a moment. But there was a new sound ahead. He went along slowly. The corridor twisted, turning to the right. He advanced slowly, the Boris gun ready. Two guards were standing a little way ahead, lounging and talking together. Beyond them was a heavy code door. And behind him, the sounds of voices were coming again, growing louder. They had found the same passage he had taken. They were on the way.
Jennings stepped out, the Boris gun raised.
Put up your hands. Let go of your guns.
The guards gawked at him.
Kids. Boys with cropped blonde hair and shiny uniforms.
They moved back, pale and scared.
The guns! Let them fall!
The two rifles clattered down. Jennings smiled.
Boys.
Probably this was their first encounter with trouble. Their leather boots shone, brightly polished.
Open the door, Jennings said. I want through.
They stared at him. Behind, the noise grew.
Open it! He became impatient. Come on!
He waved the pistol.
Open it, damn it! Do you want me to...
We can't.
What?
We can't. It's a code door. We don't have the key, honest, mister. They don't let us have the key.
They were frightened. Jennings felt fear himself now. Behind him, the drumming was louder. He was trapped, caught. Or was he? Suddenly he laughed. He walked quickly up to the door. "Faith," he murmured, raising his hand. "That's something you should never lose."
"What? What's that?"
"Faith in yourself. Self-confidence." The door slid back as he held the code key against it. Blinding sunlight streamed in, making him blink. He held the gun steady. He was outside at the gate. Three guards gaped in amazement at the gun. He was at the gate, and beyond lay the woods.
"Get out of the way!" Jennings fired at the metal bars at the gate.
The metal burst into flame, melting, a cloud of fire rising.
"Stop him!"
From behind, men came pouring, guards out of the corridor. Jennings leaped through the smoking gate. The metal tore at him, searing him. He ran through the smoke, rolling and falling. He got to his feet and scurried on into the trees. He was outside. He had not let him down. The key had worked, all right. He had tried it first on the wrong door. On and on he ran, sobbing for breath, pushing through the trees. Behind him, the plant and voices fell away. He had the papers, and he was free. He found Kelly and gave her the film and everything he had managed to stuff into his pockets. Then he changed back into his regular clothes. Kelly drove him to the edge of Stewartsville and left him off. Jennings watched the cruiser rise up into the air heading toward New York. Then he went into town and boarded the intercity rocket. On the flight he slept, surrounded by dozing businessmen. When he awoke, the rocket was settling down, landing at the huge New York spaceport. Jennings got off, mixing with the flow of people. Now that he was back, there was danger of being picked up by the SP again. Two security officers in their green uniforms watched him impassively as he took a taxi at the field station. The taxi swept him into downtown traffic. Jennings wiped his brow. That was close. Now to find Kelly. He ate dinner at a small restaurant, sitting in the back, away from the windows. When he emerged, the sun was beginning to set. He walked slowly along the sidewalk, deep in thought. So far, so good. He'd got the papers and the film, and he'd got away. The trinkets had worked every step along the way. Without them, he would have been helpless. He felt in his pocket. Two left. The serrated half-poker chip and the parcel receipt. He took the receipt out, examining it in the fading evening light. Suddenly, he noticed something. The date on it was today's date. He had caught up with the slip. He put it away, going on. What did it mean? What was it for? He shrugged. He would know in time. And the half-poker chip, what the hell was it for? No way to tell. In any case, he was certain to get through. He had got him by up to now. Surely there wasn't much left. He came to Kelly's apartment house and stopped, looking up. Her light was on. She was back. Her fast little cruiser had beaten the intercity rocket. He entered the elevator and rose to her floor. "Hello," he said when she opened the door.
"You're all right?"
"Sure. Can I come in?" He went inside. Kelly closed the door behind him.
"I'm glad to see you. The city's swarming with SP men. Almost every block. And the patrols..."
"I know. I saw a couple at the spaceport." Jennings sat down on the couch. "It's good to be back, though."
"I was afraid they might stop all the intercity flights and check through the passengers."
"They have no reason to assume I'd be coming into the city."
"I didn't think of that."
Kelly sat down across from him.
"Now, what comes next? Now that you've got away with the material, what are you going to do?"
"Next, I meet Rethrick and spring the news on him. The news that the person who escaped from the plant was myself. He knows that someone got away, but he doesn't know who it is. Undoubtedly, he assumes it was an SP man."
"Couldn't he use the time mirror to find out?"
A shadow crossed Jennings' face. "That's so. I didn't think of that." He rubbed his jaw, frowning. "In any case, I have the material. Or you have the material." Kelly nodded. "All right. We'll go ahead with our plans. Tomorrow we'll see Rethrick. We'll see him here, in New York. Can you get him down to the office? Will he come if you send for him?"
"Yes, we have a code. If I ask him to come, he'll come."
"Fine, I'll meet him there. When he realizes that we have the picture and the schematics, he'll have to agree with my demands. He'll have to let me into Rethrick Construction on my own terms. It's either that or face the possibility of having the material turned over to the security police."
"And once you're in? Once Rethrick agrees to your demands?"
I saw enough at the plant to convince me that Rethrick is far bigger than I had realized. How big, I don't know. No wonder he was so interested.
You're going to demand equal control of the company?
Jennings nodded.
You would never be satisfied to go back as a mechanic, would you? The way you were before.
No. To get booted out again? Jennings smiled. Anyhow, I know he intended better things than that. He laid careful plans. The trinkets. He must have planned everything long in advance. No, I'm not going back as a mechanic. I saw a lot there, level after level of machines and men. They're doing something, and I want to be in on it.
Kelly was silent.
See? Jennings said.
I see.
He left the apartment, hurrying along the dark street. He'd stayed there too long. If the SP found the two of them together, it would be all up with Rethrick Construction. He could take no chances, with the end almost in sight. He looked at his watch. It was past midnight. He would meet Rethrick this morning and present him with the proposition. His spirits rose as he walked. It would be safe. More than safe. Rethrick Construction was aiming at something far larger than mere industrial power. What he had seen had convinced him that a revolution was brewing. Down in the many levels below the ground, down under the fortress of concrete, guarded by guns and armed men, Rethrick was planning a war. Machines were being turned out. The time scoop and the mirror were hard at work, watching, dipping, extracting. No wonder he had worked out such careful plans. He had seen all this and understood, begun to ponder, the problem of the mind cleaning. His memory would be gone when he was released. Destruction of all the plans. Destruction. There was the alternate clause in the contract. Others had seen it, used it, but not the way he intended. He was after much more than anyone who had come before. He was the first to understand, to plan. The seven trinkets were a bridge to something beyond anything that... At the end of the block, an SP cruiser pulled up to the curb. Its door slid open. Jennings stopped, his heart constricting. The night patrol roaming through the city. It was after 11, after curfew. He looked quickly around. Everything was dark. The stores and houses were shut up tight, locked for the night. Silent apartment houses, buildings. Even the bars were dark. He looked back the way he'd come. Behind him, a second SP cruiser had stopped. Two SP officers had stepped out onto the curb. They had seen him. They were coming toward him. He stood, frozen, looking up and down the street. Across from him was the entrance of a swank hotel, its neon sign glimmering. He began to walk toward it, his heels echoing against the pavement.
Stop! One of the SP men called. Come back here! What are you doing out? What's your...
Jennings went up the stairs into the hotel. He crossed the lobby. The clerk was staring at him. No one else was around. The lobby was deserted. His heart sank. He didn't have a chance. He began to run aimlessly past the desk, along a carpeted hall. Maybe it led out some back way. Behind him, the SP men had already entered the lobby. Jennings turned a corner. Two men stepped out, blocking his way.
Where are you going?
He stopped, wary.
Let me by.
He reached into his coat for the Boris gun.
At once the men moved. Get him!
His arms were pinned to his sides. Professional hoods. Past him he could see light. Light and sound. Some kind of activity. People.
All right, one of the hoods said. They dragged him back along the corridor toward the lobby.
Jennings struggled futilely. He had entered a blind alley. Hoods. A joint. The city was dotted with them, hidden in the darkness. The swank hotel a front. They would toss him out into the hands of the SP. Some people came along the halls, a man and a woman, older people, well-dressed. They gazed curiously at Jennings, suspended between the two men. Suddenly, Jennings understood. A wave of relief hit him, blinding him.
Wait, he said thickly. My pocket! Come on!
No, wait. Look, my right pocket. Look for yourselves. The hood on his right reached, dipping cautiously into the pocket. Jennings smiled. It was over. He had seen even this. There was no possibility of failure. This solved one problem, where to stay until it was time to meet Rethrick. He could stay here.
The hood brought out the half-poker chip, examining the serrated edges. Just a second.
From his own coat he took a matching chip, fitting on a gold chain. He touched the edges together.
All right, Jennings said. Sure. They let him go.
He brushed off his coat automatically. Sure, mister. Sorry. Say, you should've...
Take me in the back, Jennings said, wiping his face. Some people are looking for me. I don't particularly want them to find me.
Sure.
They led him back into the gambling rooms. The half-chip had turned what might have been a disaster into an asset. A gambling and girl joint. One of the few institutions the police left alone. He was safe, no question of that. Only one thing remained. The struggle with Rethrick. Rethrick's face was hard. He gazed at Jennings, swallowing rapidly.
No, he said. I didn't know it was you. We thought it was the SP.
There was silence. Kelly sat at the chair by her desk, her legs crossed, a cigarette between her fingers. Jennings leaned against the door, his arms folded.
Why didn't you use the mirror, he said.
Rethrick's face flickered.
The mirror? Oh, you did a good job, my friend. We tried to use the mirror.
Tried?
Before you finished your term with us, you changed a few leads inside the mirror. When we tried to operate it, nothing happened. I left the plant half an hour ago. They were still working on it.
I did that before I finished my 2 years?
Yeah, apparently you had worked out your plans in detail. You knew that with the mirror, we would have no trouble tracking you down. You're a good mechanic, Jennings. The best we ever had. We'd like to have you back sometime, working for us again. There's not one of us that can operate the mirror the way you could. And right now, we can't use it at all.
Jennings smiled. I had no idea he did anything like that. I underestimated him. His protection was even...
Who are you talking about?
Myself. During the 2 years, I used the objective. It's easier.
Well, Jennings, so the two of you worked out an elaborate plan to steal our schematics. Why? What's the purpose? You haven't turned them over to the police.
No.
Then I can assume it's blackmail.
That's right.
What for? What do you want?
Rethrick seemed to have aged. He slumped, his eyes small and glassy, rubbing his chin nervously.
You went to a lot of trouble to get us into this position. I'm curious why. While you were working for us, you laid the groundwork. Now you've completed it, in spite of our precautions.
Precautions?
Erasing your mind. Concealing the plant.
Tell him, Kelly said. Tell him why you did it.
Jennings took a deep breath. Rethrick, I did it to get back in. Back to the company. That's the only reason. No other.
Rethrick stared at him.
To get back into the company? You can come back in, I told you that.
His voice was thin and sharp, edged with strain.
What's the matter with you? You can come back in, for as long as you want to stay.
As a mechanic?
Yes, as a mechanic. We employ many. I don't want to come back as a mechanic. I'm not interested in working for you.
Listen, Rethrick, the SP picked me up as soon as I left this office.
If it hadn't been for him, I'd be dead.
They picked you up? They wanted to know what Rethrick Construction does. They wanted me to tell them.
Rethrick nodded. Well, that's bad. We didn't know that.
No, Rethrick. I'm not coming in as an employee you can toss out any time it pleases you. I'm coming in with you, not for you.
With me?
Rethrick stared at him. Slowly a film settled over his face. An ugly, hard film.
I don't understand what you mean.
You and I are going to run Rethrick Construction together. That'll be the way from now on. And no one will be burning my memory out for their own safety.
That's what you want?
Yes.
And if we don't cut you in?
Then the schematics and films go to the SP. It's as simple as that. But I don't want to. I don't want to destroy the company. I want to get into the company. I want to be safe. You don't know what it's like being out there with no place to go. An individual has no place to turn to anymore, no one to help him. He's caught between two ruthless forces, a pawn between political and economic powers, and I'm tired of being a pawn. For a long time, Rethrick said nothing. He stared down at the floor, his face dull and blank. At last he looked up.
I know it's that way. That's something I've known for a long time. Longer than you have. I'm a lot older than you. I've seen it come, grow that way, year after year. That's why Rethrick Construction exists. Someday it'll be different. Someday, when we have the scoop and the mirror finished,
When the weapons are finished... Jennings said nothing. I know very well how it is. I'm an old man. I've been working a long time. When they told me someone had got out of the plant with schematics, I thought the end had come. We already knew you had the damaged mirror. We knew there was a connection, but we had the parts figured wrong. We thought, of course, that security had planted you with us to find out what we were doing. Then when you realized you couldn't carry out your information, you damaged the mirror. With the mirror damaged, SP could go ahead and... He stopped, rubbing his cheek. Go on, Jennings said. So you did this alone. Blackmail. To get into the company. You don't know what the company is for, Jennings. How dare you try to come in? We've been working and building for a long time. You'd wreck us to save your hide. You'd destroy us just to save yourself.
I'm not wrecking you. I can be a lot of help.
I run the company alone. It's my company. I made it, put it together. It's mine.
Jennings laughed. And what happens when you die?
Or is the revolution going to come in your own lifetime?
Rethrick's head jerked up.
You'll die and there won't be anyone to go on. You know I'm a good mechanic. You said so yourself. You're a fool, Rethrick. You want to manage it all yourself. Do everything. Decide everything. But you'll die someday. And then what will happen?
There was silence. You better let me in, for the company's good as well as my own. I can do a lot for you. When you're gone, my hands. And maybe the revolution will work.
You should be glad you're alive at all. If we hadn't allowed you to take your trinkets out with you,
what else could you do? How could you let men service your mirror, see their own futures, and not let them lift a finger to help themselves? It's easy to see why you were forced to insert the alternate payment clause. You had no choice.
You didn't even know what we were doing. Why we exist.
I have a good idea. After all, I worked for you for 2 years. Time passed. Rethrick moistened his lips again and again, rubbing his cheek. Perspiration stood out on his forehead. At last, he looked up.
Nope, he said. It's no deal. No one will ever run the company but me. If I die, it dies with me. It's my property.
Jennings became instantly alert. Then the papers go to the police. Rethrick said nothing, but a peculiar expression moved across his face, an expression that gave Jennings a sudden chill.
Kelly, Jennings said, do you have the papers with you?
Kelly stirred, standing up. She put out her cigarette, her face pale.
No.
Where are they? Where did you put them?
Sorry,
Kelly said softly.
I'm not going to tell you.
He stared at her.
What?
I'm sorry,
Kelly said again. Her voice was small and faint.
They're safe. The SP won't ever get them. But neither will you. When it's convenient, I'll turn them back to my father.
Your father? Kelly is my daughter, Rethrick said. That was the one thing you didn't count on, Jennings. He didn't count on it either. No one knew that but the two of us. I wanted to keep all positions of trust in the family. I see now it was a good idea. But it had to be kept secret. If the SP had guessed, they would have picked her up at once. Her life wouldn't have been safe.
Jennings let his breath out slowly.
I see.
It seemed like a good idea to go along with you, Kelly said. Otherwise, you'd have done it alone anyhow. And you would have had the papers on you. As you said, if the SP caught you with the papers, it would be the end of us. So I went along with you. As soon as you gave me the papers, I put them in a good safe place.
She smiled a little.
No one will find them but me. I'm sorry.
Jennings, you can come in with us, Rethrick said. You could work for us forever, if you want. You can have anything you want. Anything except
that no one runs the company but you.
That's right. Jennings, the company's old, older than I am. I didn't bring it into existence. It was, you might say, willed to me. I took the burden on, the job of managing it, making it grow, moving it toward the day of revolution, as you put it. My grandfather founded the company back in the 20th century. The company's always been in my family, and it always will be. Someday, when Kelly marries, there'll be an heir to carry it on after me. So that's taken care of. The company was founded up in Maine, in a small New England town.
My grandfather was a little old New Englander. Frugal, honest, passionately independent. He had a little repair business of some sort. Little tool and fix-it place, and plenty of knack. When he saw the government and big business closing in on everyone, he went underground. Rhetoric construction disappeared from the map. Took the government quite a while to organize Maine, longer than most places. When the rest of the world had been divided up between international cartels and world states, there was New England, still alive, still free. And my grandfather, and Rhetoric Construction. He brought in a few men, mechanics, doctors, lawyers, little once-a-week newspaper men from the Middle West. The company grew. Weapons appeared. Weapons and knowledge. The Time Scoop and the Mirror. The plant was built, secretly, at great cost, over a long period of time. The plant's big, big and deep. It goes down many more levels than you saw. He saw them, your alter ego. There's lots of power there. Power, and men who've disappeared. Purged all over the world, in fact. We got them first. The best of them. Someday, Jennings, we're going to break out. You see, conditions like this can't go on. People can't live this way, tossed back and forth by political and economic powers. Masses of people shoved this way and that, according to the needs of this government or that cartel. There's going to be resistance someday. A strong, desperate resistance. Not by big people, powerful people, but by little people. Bus drivers, grocers, vid-screen operators, waiters. And that's where the company comes in. We're going to provide them with the help they'll need, the tools, weapons, the knowledge. We're going to sell them our services. They'll be able to hire us, and they'll need someone they can hire. They'll have a lot lined up against them. A lot of wealth and power. There was silence.
Do you see? Kelly said. That's why you mustn't interfere. It's Dad's company. It's always been that way. That's the way Maine people are. It's part of the family. The company belongs to the family. It's ours.
Come on in with us, Rhetoric said. As a mechanic, I'm sorry, but that's our limited outlook showing through. Maybe it's narrow, but we've always done things this way.
Jennings said nothing. He walked slowly across the office, his hands in his pockets. After a time, he raised the blind and stared out at the street far below. Down below, like a tiny black bug, a security cruiser moved along, drifting silently with the traffic that flowed up and down the street. It joined a second cruiser already parked. Four SP men were standing by it in their green uniforms, and even as he watched, some more could be seen coming from across the street. He let the blind down.
It's a hard decision to make.
If you go out there, they'll get you, Rhetoric said. They're out there all the time. You haven't a chance.
Please,
Kelly said, looking up at him.
Suddenly, Jennings smiled. So you won't tell me where the papers are, where you put them?
Kelly shook her head. Wait. Jennings reached into his pocket. He brought out a small piece of paper. He unfolded it slowly, scanning it.
By any chance, did you deposit it with the Dunn National Bank about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon? For safekeeping in their storage vaults?
Kelly gasped. She grabbed her handbag, unsnapping it. Jennings put the slip of paper, the parcel receipt, back into his pocket.
So he saw even that, he murmured. The last of the trinkets. I wondered what it was for.
Kelly groped frantically in her purse, her face wild. She brought out a slip of paper, waving it.
You're wrong. Here it is. It's still here.
She relaxed a little.
I don't know what you have, but this is...
In the air above them, something moved.
A dark space formed, a circle. The space stirred.
Kelly and Rhetoric stared up, frozen. From the dark circle, a claw appeared. A metal claw joined to a shimmering rod. The claw dropped, swinging in a wide arc. The claw swept the paper from Kelly's fingers. It hesitated for a second. Then it drew itself up again, disappearing with the paper into the circle of black. Then silently the claw and the rod and the circle blinked out. There was nothing. Nothing at all.
Where did it go?
Kelly whispered.
The paper. What was that?
Jennings patted his pocket.
It's safe. It's safe right here. I wondered when he would show up. I was beginning to worry.
Rethrick and his daughter stood, shocked into silence.
"Don't look so unhappy," Jennings said. He folded his arms. "The paper's safe, and the company's safe. When the time comes, it'll be there, strong, and very glad to help out the revolution. We'll see to that. All of us. You, me, and your daughter."
He glanced at Kelly, his eyes twinkling.
"All three of us. And maybe, by that time,
there'll be even more members to the family."